And to me, that's what being an artist really is. I wish that I was sometimes magnificently amazing and tragically awful. Hi, and welcome to episode 110 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan. Are we going to be humorous today?
I don't know.
I think I'm a bit tired to be humorous today.
I actually thought when I said that and I looked at the day, is this a year since our first episode?
A year? It's 2 years, dear.
2 years. Is this 2 years?
52 weeks in a year, 110.
We started in January.
More than 2 years.
Oh, so it's more than 2 years. So we missed our anniversary. We didn't even celebrate. Anyway,
familiar.
That's kind of
my wedding anniversaries.
And mine. So that just sums us up, really. So if this is not our 1 year anniversary, what are you working on at the moment?
Okay, so we have had, the reason we're a little bit gaga today, forgive us, if you're listening to the first, if this is the first Art Juice episode that you're listening to,
don't listen
to this one first. Find another one and then come back another time, because it might be one of those ones where we just kind of, the words are forming in our brain and they don't quite come out of your mouth properly. So we've had a busy week helping people, answering questions, people who've been thinking about joining CVP, which is now closed. And it is exciting. And I have to say, this year, because I'm kind of not involved with delivering the program, I haven't been thinking about it so much. But watching what Nick delivered in the workshops, everything that goes on behind the scenes, just, I'm so excited for everybody who's doing it. But it kind of a little bit caught us unaware. So the week was a little bit disrupted. We've had more questions. I hope if you sent an email, sorry if we missed any of them. But in between that, okay, as well as doing that, then I've been a bit geeky with a print order system. So until now, I've had, if a print order comes in, I just email it off to my printer. I've been doing a spreadsheet that we both have access to with drop down menus, so we know where each section is, each print. So I've been geeking out about that. It's taken me a while to build it, but we've been testing it this week. And she's like, oh, this is good. This is really working. So she can log in. She can see all the address details if they're doing the shipping. She can click down, yes, this is done. It's ready for you to come in and sign. So we're seeing how that goes. So,
oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. I'll have to look at that later this year. So
just a little bit of streamlining. But yeah. You know, if you're listening to that and thinking, oh my God, I need that. You don't need any of these things until you need them. Don't think about things that are like way further down the line. You get to a point, both in your art and in businessy things, where, you know, you do things, you wing it. I'm in a sort of mastermind group, and there are people in there at the moment. When I say mastermind, I just mean people doing businessy things. They're still winging it. You know, you work something out when you need to. So don't listen to that and think, oh, I should be doing that. You shouldn't. You're fine.
Yeah. Well, I've been playing in my sketchbooks. I can say that every week, and I've got a feeling I'll keep saying it for quite a while. And what's happened is it started to become kind of a process. So initially it was, I just want something relaxing to do. Yeah. And now it's starting to, I've got about 5 different books on the go, and they're all finding their way as ways to develop ideas.
Yeah.
So, and I'm working on it almost from a process painting perspective. So I've said before that I feel like my best paintings are much more intuition than thought. But you do have to apply some thought when you're thinking of making a finished painting. And when I'm working in books, I can just make it purely intuition and not worry about what it looks like. And in the process of doing that, I'm then discovering and just noticing, oh, that's interesting. That shape keeps coming up over and over again. Mm-hmm. Those marks keep coming out. I wonder why I'm so obsessed with using these blues at the moment, and how can I push them more. and not having to worry that, yeah, but that looks a bit of a mess. So for me, I've been playing in sketchbooks and I've been developing a new process, which is working intuitively, purely with no thought and not stopping and going back and judging. And doing that with a reason in mind, though, doing that to create and develop ideas for myself and see what I want to do next. And it's been really interesting. And so, for example, I've got one book I'm just starting where I'm going to work in a limited palette, but just play with that palette, in it, just making marks and splashing around and not caring what it looks like. But that's as a way of exploring that palette rather than making little color circles or swatches or whatever. And another book where it's about shapes, and another book where I realized one shape was coming in, so I'm working with that shape. But just purely letting it come from, I suppose it's process painting, really.
But
with a goal in mind of like, let me find out what wants to come out next. So it's really good fun. And I feel this urge to maybe include something like this in my course later this year as part of what we do, because it is very freeing to be in a book where you don't have to show anyone else if you don't want to. I mean, I'm not bothered, I'll show anybody, but if people are, you know, a bit intimidated about showing really rough things, you can put it in a book, you can close it up, you can put it away and nobody has to know. I think it's a really nice way of exploring.
That's really interesting, because I've always felt that sketchbooks can be almost the opposite, that sketchbooks can be somewhat intimidating, partly because you see other people's artist sketchbooks, and you know they are beautiful things often, you know, they are really beautiful objects, and I find that more intimidating than a painting that I know I can change and fix, and I say when it's done, it's done. On a sketchbook, it's like you've done the sketchbook page. And it's like, oh, but I want this to be like all those other things that I see. And I often, we could do a whole set. Let's do a whole session on how we work on sketchbooks, because I've got.
No, because what struck me when I was doing it was, wow, Alice and I use sketchbooks in the opposite ways.
Yeah, like, you use it much more as like doing whereas I tend to do that stuff on loose sheets, and my sketchbooks tend to be more
very
scrapbooky.
Also a lot of thought, like a lot of like developing ideas in a different way.
Yeah.
I think it's like the difference between us is in our sketchbooks and the way we work in them, which is really interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do that a separate time when we have time to gather some photographs too, because people are going to want to see.
Yeah.
So. All right.
But that's what I've been up to. So we'll do a whole thing on that. Our main topic this week was inspired by some things that happened just over the last few weeks, really, just a series of events that happened that got us thinking about. The way I describe it when I wrote the notes for this episode is that we live in an art bubble of positivity. I think because of the artist communities that we belong to and the communities that we both run, we just live in a bubble of sharing and kindness and supporting each other. And sometimes when you step outside that bubble, you find out that's not what the rest of the world is always like. And it can be a little bit jarring, but it's also given me a lot of food for thought watching the way people have handled situations. Yeah. And I know you too. Where do we want to start with this one?
Let's start with what I think was one of the most difficult things that I have ever seen online. And I have full approval to share this. One of my members received the worst kind of letter. It was thought about, typed, her address was discovered, it was typed, it was sent to her anonymously from artists in her area accusing her and saying, it basically said, how dare you call yourself an artist? You mustn't do this. We've been to art school. We have years of knowledge. You know, you can't just turn up and call yourself an artist and be selling work. How dare you sell work? You're stealing our market. Stop doing this. It was awful. I mean, it was complete, you know, on legal terms, if they send another one, there is a legal case to be held against them. It was just extraordinarily. And I think the thing that shocked me most of all, apart from just the attitude of it, was that somebody actually took time to do that, to think about it. It's not just a thought. There's two stages, isn't there? There's the thought and then there's the doing it. The thought, quite frankly, is bad enough. But we all have thoughts, like every, you know, hands up, everybody has unpleasant thoughts, right? We're not living in unicorn, happy, pink, fairy cloudland all the time. We all have, quite frankly, bitchy thoughts sometimes, or mean thoughts. But there's thinking it, and then there's actually sitting down, doing it, writing it, knowing that you're sending it to somebody, which was just so horrendous. Anyway, this person, she posted in our group, and of course, there was just this incredible swell of support. And I was worried about her, because I know that if I had received a letter like that slightly in the early days, it would have hit me for six. And I think that's what everybody felt so angry about. They were like, this could really stop you if you were feeling fragile. And not even if you're feeling fragile, like if you're just normal, because it's the kind of thing that like makes you feel sick to the pit of your stomach. So I reached out to her and called her because I was worried. Having spoken to her, I wasn't so worried, because she just had the most wonderful attitude to it. Within 5 minutes, we were laughing about it. She then went on and did a live stream. So it's Elaine, is it Elaine Tobin or Elaine Tobin Art on Instagram? And she did a live stream about it, and she read it out, and she basically said, you know, I'm not going to stop. I'm really sorry if you feel like this. You know, actually what you need is artist community around you, because, you know, this is a scarcity thing. This whole idea of you're stealing our buyers, I mean, it's a nonsense. So what was inspiring about that was the way that she turned it around, I think. And people had all sorts of ideas. They're like, you should send that to the local newspaper and make a story about it, and like, you know, your biggest way of coming out of that is to be fantastically successful. You're obviously rubbing somebody up the wrong way. They see you as a threat. But I mean, it was just the most extraordinary situation. Awful to see. Fantastic to see her response, but what a difference attitude makes. And I don't think you could exemplify two such opposite attitudes.
Yeah, it was the scarcity of I'm a qualified artist. Apparently, this person also goes for annual exams to keep up their certification as an artist. So I don't know what those are, but we should find out about taking those. But the whole letter was written to her. I feel like it was written by one person who pretended to be more than one person. And then they said something in there about everybody thinks this about you. So you could be walking around your local town feeling like everybody's looking at me. Everybody got together. Like, you imagine there's this meeting where they all sat down and did this, and now they're all looking at you. And I don't believe that was true, but it does just, like you say, exemplify that mindset of you are not allowed in here. We have a degree. I mean, how many great artists didn't have a degree? What does having a degree mean?
Basquiat, Frida Kahlo, I mean, the masses of them.
Yeah. Doesn't mean a thing. So anyway, yes, it was just so, and it made us think about this topic of these different attitudes and the attitudes that you approach the world with. Like, I guarantee that person who said in their letter that they were struggling and therefore they resented Elaine selling her work, she or he is struggling because of that attitude.
Yeah,
like that attitude is guiding the way they live their whole life, and that's making it a scarce world for them. And it the way we approach things, I really have come to believe it creates your reality.
Yeah.
Just in big and small ways. And I think I've said this before, but there was one time we went to the, totally non-art related, we went to the Tip and my mum had been to the same tip the same day. So we said, oh yeah, and they were great. They were so helpful when she got there, when we got there. And she said, helpful? Huh. We just sat there and nobody tried to help us. And it was a miserable experience and we're going to complain. And it was the same tip on the same day. And two yeah. people's attitudes made two different things happen. And I just, that's what interests me about this situation. And Elaine's attitude is, was kind yeah. and generous.
Yeah.
And she even said, reach out to me and we can talk, which I thought was amazingly generous. And so she's the one who's selling her work, and she's doing well enough that she's made this person really angry.
just extraordinary. But I just think, you know, thank heavens. And, it doesn't necessarily take a whole crowd of people, but you need somebody to turn to when something like that happens. I mean, I just know that it would have knocked me for six. But like I say, what really knocked me was the fact that, you know, that just that bitterness, just yeah. difficult. And from that point of view, I suppose you have to think, you know, that person has had various things along the way to get them into that state in the first place. So, you know, but like I say, you know, I'm being honest, we all have thoughts, like we're not all totally nice all the time, but to take it to that level was really quite extraordinary. So, yeah.
yeah.
What do we, I'm sure we don't need to tell our listeners not to write nasty anonymous letters.
No, but I think it's just this idea of when we run up against it as well, what we do and how we feel. It's when we run up against it, how we react. I think watching Elaine's video on Instagram, for anybody who you won't have experienced this quite this horrible, I'm sure, but something negative. I mean, this is a really minor thing, but I've been showing up on YouTube a lot more in the last few months, and almost always positive comments, but YouTube can be a dog eat dog world.
Yeah.
And on one of my videos, someone wrote, "You have stolen this whole process from," and then they gave a name. It wasn't like a real person's name. It was a YouTube channel. And I looked that person up. I've never heard of them. I don't know who they are, but it was a person basically making abstract paintings. Yep. And actually she was making them taped off like I do, but my video wasn't about the taped off squares. But the taped off squares aren't any original idea of anybody's. It's just something lots of people do. But that wasn't even what my video was. And this only commonality seemed to be intuitive abstract painting. This person was very talented. The paintings were nice. I'd never heard of them. But I just thought, who takes the time to actually accuse someone of stealing when you have absolutely no idea if they stole? Their limited art knowledge obviously meant they thought anything abstract and intuitive was copied from the only one person who had ever done that. And so it just, I didn't bother answering. Well, I think I did actually say, no, I did answer her, because I said, these are the artists who are currently working who inspire me. I'm quite happy to name names, but not that person, because I'd not heard of them before. But that, again, it's just how you respond, isn't it? You can be, first of all, think about what you're saying to somebody, even if it's not to that degree. Mm. That person's comment, even if that person had said more subtly something like, I've seen something very similar to this on so-and-so's page. If the person you're talking to is quite inexperienced or new to what they're doing, and this is the point Elaine made, people are very sensitive, and you've got to really think through anything you say so you don't throw that person off. That didn't throw me off. But what if that was my first YouTube video? And what if I thought, oh, I better not post my things. People are going to think I'm stealing.
Are we saying here that it's going to happen, so you have to grow a tougher skin?
I think you have to grow a tougher skin.
That's a bit sad, also, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah. But also, is it that you have to be gentle in the way you respond, because otherwise you can escalate things?
Yes.
So Elaine could have escalated that. She could have sent it to the local newspaper, and she could have gone around local artist websites looking for people who couldn't capitalize properly. And she could have probably identified who that person is because they capitalized the word artist all the way through their letters. So find a website in that area where the word artist is always capitalized, and that's probably that person. She didn't do any of that. She just confronted it in a nice way, which kept it on a certain level. I feel anyway, perhaps that person would have felt it was escalated. But, and the same with my YouTube comment, I could say, how dare you? You know, I don't copy from other people. And then that person might come back and it starts to escalate. And the escalation thing goes to this other side of this that we both saw. And this conversation has now taken place in two groups that I belong to about Cy Twombly. And somebody in two different groups posted an article about a sale of Cy Twombly paintings for a lot of money.
Right.
And they're the big swirly, like, scribbles that go repetitive. I don't know what those paintings are called. But the comment both times was kind of, you know, if only it was this easy to make that much money, this is not real art, kind of thing. And then the discussion that ensued in both groups was, ha, you know, that's ridiculous. Stupid people who like that kind of art. They're just being taken for a ride. And it was really, it got quite mean-spirited. Mm-hmm. And then if anyone dared to step in and say, I actually really like Cy Twombly's paintings and he's actually a very well-respected artist, they got piled on by, well, you're just an idiot. And you know, the emperor's got no clothes was in my group. You know, everybody's laughing at you if you like this. And I thought that was really interesting, particularly because Cy Twombly is someone who even critics are divided about. So some art critics think that there's nothing to him and he's a big con, and some think he's a genius. And he's someone that when I first saw his work, I was like confused. Why does everyone like this? And I did some Googling. I did some reading. I discovered that I wasn't alone, that there is controversy. I bought a book about him and I read it and I got to understand a lot better. And I found that I do actually really appreciate some of his paintings. And somebody said in one of the pieces I read, this is an artist who was so brave that sometimes he's tragically awful and sometimes he's magnificently amazing. And and to me, that's what being an artist really is. I wish that I was sometimes magnificently amazing and tragically awful, because that's where you're really at the point where you're making amazing work, I think. But it just found it interesting that for some people, their reaction isn't, let me go learn and find out what I'm not getting. Let me go try and understand why everyone's saying this. Their reaction is, no, shut that out. That's rubbish. I don't want to deal with it. Why do you think people feel like that? Why do they do that?
I think it's, I don't know. I think it's a frustration. I mean, I think very often it is a frustration of something you don't understand. So going back to Elaine's letter, you know, the person who was writing it was frustrated, like they're annoyed. I've done this degree. I should know what I'm doing. I'm having a hard time with this. I'm not selling my work. You seem to be doing fine without any of that. Therefore, I am confused. Therefore, I'm cross and angry and I'm going to take it out on you. You know, the same is true with Cy Twombly. I mean, whether you like his work or not is one thing, but to dismiss it without, if you say, I'm not interested in it, it's fine. That is your personal choice. But to dismiss it so aggressively, to call other people who like it an idiot, is just blinkered, quite frankly. I don't understand it. I've got a massive, great big inch and a half book about it. And I know that he uses there's all sorts of classical reference and mythology and all sorts of things in his work, which I have to say goes straight over my head. You wouldn't know it looking at the paintings. And I think this is the wonderful thing about art, is that we can relate to it on all sorts of different levels. And that's fine. And there are lots of artists who have many layers to their work that I don't even pretend to understand. Some of it is because I'm not interested. I'm not visually excited about their work enough to want to take the time to look. And that's fine. But I wouldn't dismiss other people who were. I mean, I think we all get to choose that. But I mean, I just think it's really interesting how there are so many different potential inroads into looking and appreciating art. And if you're not prepared to acknowledge the fact that some of it is because of your own limitations, that's where you're going to get stuck.
Yeah, and I agree. And for me, curiosity is really like the basic prerequisite for being an artist. I don't think there's many things you have to have. Good work ethic, ability to work on your own, and curiosity. And to not be curious, to just push it away, it's you're keeping your world small. Because you're not, like, I agree with you, you don't have to want to learn about it if you don't want to learn. If you're not curious about that particular person, that's fine. But just not attacking, as you say, everybody else who is. And I've seen that in other things in recent weeks, where if people like something, the people who don't like that, they can't just settle for saying, I don't like that. They have to say, and you, if you like it,
you're
being stupid. Yeah. You're missing.
I just wonder if that's worse at the moment. So, you know, we're end of February.
Yeah.
We're end of February. Everybody's stressed. There's all sorts of things. I mean, goodness no, you turn on the radio. I mean, I left, it was in support of their Facebook comment, but I left a comment on somebody's Facebook post this morning, you know, having a grumble about Gavin Williamson and what a twat he is. Now, some of you might agree with me, some of you might think he's doing a fantastic job. That's fine. That was me venting. I wasn't saying they were a fool, but you know, it comes out. Ugh. So
it's coming out now, people, I can see.
It's not really, really wouldn't be top of my list of people to have dinner with. But even allowing for the fact that everybody's a bit probably pricklier. That'd be a fair word, pricklier at the moment. I just think we just have to acknowledge where we are in this. Like, I'm not a big fan of performance art, but that is purely because I don't have the time for everything. And I have not spent any time at all investigating it or understanding it. Perfectly happy to own that.
But it would be different if you showed up to a Facebook group where everybody loved performance art and started dropping comments everywhere about how stupid they all were.
Oh, who has the time for that? This, which is really the thing, isn't it? Seriously, this is really the thing. Who has time for this? Like, we all have limited time. We all say, oh, I'd like to do this with my time. I don't have enough time for this. I want to worry about that. Really, pick where you spend your time. You know, why would you spend your time picking fights with things? I don't know. It just doesn't get you. And again, you know, I've probably done it too. We all have, but it just doesn't get you where you want to go, does it?
No. And that brings me to something that happened to me this week, which was somebody in my memberships I had accidentally, I think, I can't remember the details, but either signed up twice or made some kind of mistake when she signed up. And so she'd been paying several times, and she'd been doing that for a year, paying twice a month. And she wrote very nicely saying, I think I'm paying twice a month. And we checked into it. Yes, you are. Here's why you are. And we refunded the excess payment and cancelled the second account. And it's all fine. Somebody else got a bank statement, which they misread, and they've cancelled their membership, but they got this bank statement and wrote to me in a fury that I had stolen money from them and that how dare I continue to take money from them. And I was a bit panicked because I started to think, as someone, she said I was invoiced from you and that my system doesn't allow that once you've cancelled. So I couldn't understand it. I started panicking that I'd been hacked and someone was, and I'm telling Phil, someone's using my bank account and we have to get to the bottom of it. And it was like 10 o'clock at night and he was going, just wait till the morning. Let's see, you know, let's see what happens. Aww. Anyway. Yeah. When I got up in the morning, she'd written back to say, oh, I made a mistake. It's fine. And there was no apology and there was no, you know, but the first email was so attacking. It was honestly, you are a thief and how dare you? And this is someone who'd been in my group for quite a while. And I think, can't you tell that I'm probably not a horrible thief? And it made me think about the way we approach, and I'm sure I've done this when I'm in a bad mood, when somebody's service is bad or something. I'm sure I've been grumpy on the phone with the person I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
When it would be so much more effective to be polite, like that first person who we had actually charged twice for.
Yeah.
Not through any fault of our own, but we had actually taken money from her twice. And don't you get more if you just approach people nicely? And I think the point is assume the best. Yeah. Unless it's proven the worst. But so many people, and again, this must be life history, life experiences, family members, whatever. So many people approach it from the perspective of, I'm getting screwed somehow, and I'm going to fight my corner to stop that from happening. And I understand that you probably come from some kind of background if you approach life like a fight, but it must make it so tiring as well. And you don't get what you want. You never get the kind act from someone.
No.
Who maybe refunds you an extra month by apology and says, you know, sorry about that, have a free month on us. Or
yeah, and also giving somebody the space to do that extra thing. It's like some of what I've been doing this week, you know, people just come and they just have a little rant and they just come and have a little rant. And then I'm midway through giving them an answer or something that's going to be helpful or point them in the right direction. And they've just clicked off and gone. It's like, oh, okay, well then I can't help you there. And likewise, I spent a while trying to get through to HMRC. And when eventually at the end of a week, I got through, the poor woman on the end of the phone, she sounded like she was almost in tears. She was like, we just have such a backlog. We're working through it. I know it was 3 months ago, but we're really doing it. And I was like, okay. All right. As long as I just have some idea of time scale of when this should be coming, you know, but I just felt she's dealing with this every day.
Yeah.
All day, every day. Very, very, very difficult.
Yeah, because you were doing live chat, weren't you? So that's where you're actually speaking to real life people in real life.
Mostly, I have to say on that, and I think that this is because of, you know, the community that Nick builds around him. You know, the reason that I said to them, I'll come back and do live chat is because actually I want to bust this thing that live chat is a computer robot person, and I enjoy the conversations that I have on there that help people, because we have reference information so that you know you're giving people proper facts. But if somebody comes on and says, you know, I'm really worried that I can do this with a child in tow, it's like, yeah, no, I've been there, why not? Yeah, I get that, you know.
Yeah.
What do they like doing? Do they play Lego? Can you know all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's not always about the following routines. Anyway, we're getting off the point.
We are getting off. Except that again, when you said the community that Nick builds around him, I think that's what we've done. And it brings us back to the beginning where we live in this bubble where everybody's nice and everybody's kind. And it's very, very rare that we get that experience where somebody's not nice and kind, or where somebody doesn't assume the best before they start asking you a question or challenging something. And I definitely think I have to get a little bit more thick skinned, especially if I'm going to be more on YouTube, because that's going to bring with it some more nastiness. So far I've been really lucky. And when it does, I have to just remember that, yes, I live in a bubble and I'm very lucky to live in this nice, kind bubble. But once in a while, I do have to venture out of it.
Well, you don't have to venture out of it intentionally, but yeah. I mean, I think you're lucky with a podcast. We're lucky with a podcast in the sense that maybe people don't, you know, if they don't like it, they just don't listen. They turn off. They don't listen again. They can't really, they don't really have a go.
Except for that one lady who wrote a review saying, my God, do they go on a long time or something?
Yeah, probably.
Which is true, you know, you can't argue with that, we do.
But if you're interested in going into this a little bit further, I would recommend some of the books by Abraham Hicks, Power of Attraction books. And it's about how your attitude and energy shift and what you focus on has an impact on what happens in your life. And it was complete woo-woo when it was introduced to me. I was like, this is a stuff load of nonsense.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah. But
especially because this is a lady who, especially because you listen to a woman, if you listen on YouTube or on podcast, who is being channeled through by an ancient spirit called Abraham. So if you collective. Can get past that, an ancient collective, oh, well, whatever.
It's a collective, yeah, it's a collective understanding.
Okay, and it's called Abraham. So it's very confusing to hear Abraham speaking with a woman's voice. However,
yeah,
if you get past the woo-woo stuff, it's just like my story with my mum and the tip.
Yeah.
It really is. Have you ever been in a situation, and I'm trying to think of an example, but where you've seen something one way and it's caused you great unhappiness?
Yeah.
And then your life shifts and changes and you stop thinking about that thing. And you think, oh, remember all that time I spent being unhappy about that? And now it just doesn't matter. Now I see it completely differently because I'm busy with other things. And you can't do that with everything. Obviously, there are some things which are difficult. But you can make them worse by the way you think about them.
Yeah. Or stay stuck longest. I think that's a big thing for me. And it is, it's an ongoing thing. It's this idea of being stuck in a place that you don't want to be. And it doesn't matter whether it's creatively or in a painting or, you know, just that awareness of your situation, what's come from the outside and what you personally are contributing towards it. Yeah. And actually, the part that you can change is what you do about it. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I do wallow in grumpiness and frustration at the government, you know, whatever's going on, because like I want to vent a little bit and, you know, get things out. And then I get up and then I get on with my day and then I think about something else and choose a different focus and decide to do something different. And sometimes, you know, I'm tired and I feel like I don't have time. And then you accept that and then you think, okay, but what am I going to do to shift this? I'm going to do this and I'm going to think differently about this and I'm going to appreciate this and I'm going to go off and do that. It's not, none of this is like a one hit instant solution. It's an ongoing thing. And that's what I really like about the Abraham Hicks stuff is that it's, and you can watch them, just search on YouTube, just Google, and you just get these little short snippets and it will just slightly shift your thinking. And I find it really helpful.
This is the first time we've done a listener question for quite a few weeks, but we got a really good question this morning on Instagram. And I apologize to this person because my lack of Instagram direct message knowledge means I can't retrieve the original message or your name. So I really apologize for that.
You can flag them, you know. You know, you can mark a message with a little flag and then it gets a little orange corner in it so you can find it again.
I should have done that, lovely person who sent me this question, but hopefully you recognize yourself because I've got the copy that I sent to Alice. So this person said she's starting painting as a side project and it feels like we produce loads of work and she spends ages over a couple of canvases at a time. Mm-hmm. So she's wondering why that is. Are you bursting with ideas or do you turn one painting into a series to produce more, or am I bad at just getting started and finishing? So this is a person who's spending ages on a couple of canvases and she sees us and she thinks, wow, how do they make all that?
It's like everything. It gets a little bit easier and a little bit quicker the more you understand it. So I'm watching my, you know, I've shared with you Lemon Soup before. I'm watching my husband learn to cook at the moment. And even my daughter says it is painfully slow watching Daddy in the kitchen because he's reading everything and checking everything and measuring everything and weighing it and double checking the recipe. And, you know, I would do the same recipe in a third of the time because I'd be like, yeah, you do this and you get that going. Well, because you know how to do it. You know how to put it together. You understand the sequence. He's working it out. I think it's the same with painting. I think it takes time to find your approach. I've always worked in series ever since, and I started off just working in pairs. And then I remember the first group of work that I wanted to create, and I wanted them to be the same size. They were very small. They were oil paintings. So I've always worked in a series because I find that that helps me not focus on one too much. That's one thing. But I think taking a step back from that, sometimes when you get stuck and you feel like you're not making progress very quickly, it's because you don't really know what it is that you want to be painting. And I think sometimes if you can get that a little bit clearer before you begin, it can help, because it helps you then know what part to focus on and give yourself benchmarks to kind of judge when it's done or not, which is, I think, is one of the things that really makes a painting drag on and on and on, is not knowing when it's finished, which I think is also a big part of this. When a painting feels like it's dragging on and on, it's because you don't have that benchmark for kind of deciding when it's done for you. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that second point. It's a really good point that at the beginning, for me, I did take ages on every painting and futzed around with them and didn't really know what I was doing with them. And yesterday I started 5 small panels, 12 by 12s, just putting down first layers. And here's what I did, if this helps you imagine it. So I just put down some big color areas and some big marks in the same palette on all of them. And then I left them to dry in the morning, and then I came back and I had another half an hour spare. So I put some bits of collage on and drew some marks on all 5. And then when I come back in and look at them this morning, there's nothing to them. I was like quite excited about them last night, but of course there's nothing to them because it's, but there's 5 things started all with the same general idea.
Yeah.
And now I can develop each one. So for me, that's how I do it. It's always, as Alice said, in a big group, but it wasn't always. And don't ever look at someone who's been doing it for a lot longer and think, I must be rubbish if I'm doing it this way. Because if you saw us 7-8 years ago in Alice's case, or whatever, 5-6 years ago in mine, or however long ago it was, if you saw us then, it would have been very different to what you see now. And it just comes, as Alice said, it's part of the experience. But I do think working in a series, instead of starting 1 or 2, starting 5 or 6 on the same topic, that's moved me along, or on the same idea. It might just be an idea of colour, but it's moved me along faster.
I think it depends how you like to paint though. And I think, so say for example, if you're doing a still life, that might not suit you.
A vase of flowers though, you could do 3 or 4 different compositions from that one vase of flowers and work on them all at the same time, couldn't you?
You could do, if you can handle that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. You could. But I think some people might like to, it depends how fast you paint, doesn't it? Some people, it might be focus on one vase of flowers, and by the time the flowers have died, that's how long it takes you. If it takes you 3 or 4 days to do a painting and you prefer to do it in one hit, that's how long it's going to do. Or you split your time. You could do what Louise suggests. You could work on one view in the morning and then one view in the afternoon. It depends how much time you have. Flowers are different because they die.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I like
the idea of, when I did my portrait recently, which is my only realistic thing I've done for years, I had about 3 or 4 of them on the go and just see which one.
Yes.
Worked, partly because I'm impatient as well for things to dry. I can't wait, so it's like I need to get going. So anyway, that's it. But don't stress and pressure yourself about it, because it's not about you're not doing it right. It's just about you maybe need a bit more practice, a bit more time. And do you have the other part of her question was, do you have loads of ideas? Because I was thinking about this. I'm not sure I have loads of ideas. I have one idea usually.
I was going to say, I either have loads or one, and it's very single-minded but open. I do have loads of ideas, in the sense that I have lots of things that I want to explore that I don't always have time for, because I want, as you say, going back to this idea of curiosity, I don't think you can answer all your ideas in one piece. So that means that you're going to have a group of multiples if you want to give yourself the space to explore it fully. But what I don't know is if that is lots of ideas or just lots of different interpretations, and the idea is one and there's just a number of different outlets for it.
And you bring up a really good point, which you've said before, that this person might be a bit stuck in. When you have an idea, if you try and get one painting to do everything, so let's say it's flowers, and you're trying to get it to say everything there is to say about those flowers, you're not going to be able to do it. But if you say, I'm going to make a series of paintings about these flowers, then you can have one where it's really close up and it's about the luscious petals and the center, and one where it's distant and it's about a vase set to one side on a long table, and one where it's, you know, from above. Or you can say a lot more about those flowers, and you don't have to make one painting do everything. And that's at the beginning what I always did, and you've brought that up before, that each painting just has to say one little thing. And so I can make 12-inch panels about this blue and black that I'm working with, and each one could be different and a different aspect of that.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that's not a new idea. If you look back, you know, look at Mondrian and his tree, you know, how many different paintings did he do about that tree? You know, a lot. Cézanne and his mountain. Haystacks, yes. You know?
Yeah.
It's not just one painting. From that point of view, it is a series of inquiries, I think. So I've got one more tip that you might want to try if you're spending ages on your canvas, which is to really give yourself a time limit on it. So just simply don't let yourself spend too long, because then we get slow, we get obsessive, we get finicky. So this is where it does help to have two on the go. And I certainly noticed, you know, before I really understood how I wanted to use the paint and when I wanted it to mix and when I wanted it not to mix, it gets difficult. You know, if you get to the stage where you're working wet in wet and it's not working how you want, then that can be a good time to step away. But really give yourself a time limit. Say, look, I've only got 15 minutes to go in and really make a difference to this. What does it need? What am I going to do? And then have a break. And kind of push yourself to do that, to go in, to do something on it, to make a change, to step back, move on to the other one, make a change, step back. And I think sometimes when we feel we've got a long time, it just slows everything down. And yes, that can be very gentle and restful, but also it doesn't bring any of that other kind of energy that you might want to have into a painting. So I would challenge you to, if you normally have, you know, a 2 or 3 hour painting session, give yourself only half an hour, but think of yourself like a little bit on speed, like you're going to go in there and do something and really just enjoy it, just have fun with it. And see how that will change, and just try to bring a different energy into your painting sessions when you go back to it. That would be a tip that I think is worth trying if you've got to the stage where everything is just slow and considered.
I think that's brilliant. I love that tip.
It's fun. I do it in the studio. I set my timer on my phone. Always,
but do you always stop though, or sometimes I ignore it when it goes off.
I do sometimes ignore it when it goes off, but it's good because it just gets you out of that obsessive phase. And if it's got you started going again, then I just find it a really helpful thing. I don't do it, like I say, every time I paint, but when I need it, that's a really good extra little tip.
So I hope that was helpful. Now let's move on to this week's What's Inspired. So what has inspired you this week, Alice?
I am still gently, much like yours at the beginning in a way, playing in my sketchbooks and kind of slowly. It's at a slow pace, but it feels like I'm getting there. I'm getting more interested in drawing again. I feel I need to bring another visual subject in. And I am beginning to get some ideas of what that might be. Again, it's a similar thing for me. It's this crossover between living in a city, complex, man-made things and natural spaces somehow. That's always the link for me, people and spaces around us. So, but I'd feel like I'd like something a little bit more concrete visually.
Interesting.
Don't know. We'll see.
That will be interesting. Well, I've got two books this week because you were doing books last week. One's really giant and one's really tiny. So the really giant one, I treated myself to in my quest for understanding.
Ooh.
So I'm doing my own MA, I've decided, and I'm just learning as much as I can. And this is a book about Joan Mitchell, everybody. That's why Alice is oohing, because it's also beautiful and the cover's like a canvas. It feels like canvas.
It's got, I was oohing at that lovely purple canvas binding.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous book and it's very heavy and big, so it's going to take, and there's a lot of writing as well as pictures, so it's going to take me a while, but I'm really looking forward to that. So that was a treat for myself.
How much
you
was
asked
that?
Me once. Oh, I don't know. You asked me once what I treat myself on, and at the time I couldn't think of anything. And now I've started to treat myself on expensive art books. No, it doesn't even have a price on it.
Oh, always a bad sign.
Yeah, it wasn't cheap. It was a treat. So that was the first book that came in the post this week. But then a very tiny book came in the post, and it's called 12 Weeks of Lockdown by John Clayton. And he is a member of my art tribe. And you can, and it's a little book that he made. He was, I think he must have been furloughed from work. Sorry, John, I'm not sure. But he had a lot of time during lockdown. And he made all of these little studies and paintings while he was on his walks in lockdown. Some are representational, some are abstracted. And he's written not essays or poems, but just little snippets of words. So this one says summer house, secret meadow, wood edges, red campion, forget me nots, checking phone. So he's written down just all impressions, fleeting impressions, and then all these lovely paintings. And it's beautiful, it's amazing, and it's all to raise money for Manchester Royal Infirmary charity. But he sent this to me just by surprise with a lovely letter. And if anybody wants to have a look at this, so it's raising money for the NHS, and his website is johnclayton-artist.com, and it's John, J-O-N, johnclayton-artist.com. But he ends the book saying bridge over the Wheelock, rain getting worse, hot and humid, joining bubbles, back to work. So I guess that was the end of his lockdown experience. But really lovely. So thank you, John. I haven't actually written a thank you note yet, but I will. And
that also looks lovely. Nice, perfect binding.
Yep.
Good really, size.
And it's very lovely paper quality and very.
What is it, like 20 by 20 centimetres, something like that?
Yeah. Is it even a bit smaller, I think?
It's nice. I love that people are being kind of creative in this way and making something available like that. What a fantastic thing we have.
Yeah, I know. And we're so lucky that we can do this kind of thing now.
I know. We'll all be doing one.
I know.
Just imagine if we all did one and we all had the same format, and then we all had this beautiful little row of, like, it's like owning a piece of an artist, isn't it? If you just had this incredible row of books and they were all.
I love this idea of artists putting their work into books,
which
is mine started as it was just going to be something like this, maybe a bit bigger, but done by myself. But I love the idea that you can buy, like I now have, and John sent this, by the way, with a little hand-painted painting with his letter was on the back of, and that is so beautiful. It's going in a frame. It really is lovely. So I've got all of John's work to look at whenever I want. And I wish I could have that for every artist that whose work I love. So if you're out there, make a book and I'll buy it. I'm on a book buying binge. So I've got this idea that if I put an extension on my kitchen, it could have a little office off it. And that's where I could have book I could have all lined with shelves, just art books. And so I need to buy a lot of books in order to do that.
Mine are all around the house. That's my problem, is I take them places with me and then they're not gathered in one area.
Yeah.
And then where's the one that I want to refer to? I'm like, well, where did I leave it? Is it in the stack by my bed? Is it in the studio? Is it down in the sitting room? Where have I left it? You know, is it at the end of the dining table with that pile of books? They're just everywhere.
I know. Well, that's it for us this week, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed. We shall see you next week as usual. And if you want to follow either of us, you can find us on Instagram, Alice Sheridan Studio and Louise Fletcher Art on Instagram. So come on over and find us and say hi. And otherwise, we will see you next week. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. So frustrating. Just instead of what's inspired, should we do what's annoyed us this week?
No, we've done that already.
My internet, Louise's internet, has annoyed us this week. This is like I've got all John's work now to look at whenever I want. I've begun again. So we're going to close now with what's inspired. Oh, fuck.